Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Today's my guest is Scott Cruz. He's here in the studio. We're talking about synergy flow arts, about creative entrepreneurship, and just being lucky and being in the right place at the right time to have an idea and make it a business. And let me tell you a little bit about Scott. Scott said he is first and foremost a drummer. He's been drumming for 21 years, and we're going to hear a little bit about that too. But he taps in, he says, into that similar creativity for his business and the products he produces for his fire dance prop company, which he started in 2008. So his life and business lessons for us are about e-commerce, following that creativity and going where our passions are. And he started Synergy Flow Arts in 2008 as a dance prop manufacturing company specializing in fire props, and I want to know all about those fire props. And one of them is a fire hoop, which is a hula hoop, it says, with spokes and fire. And he manufactures these and sells them to dancers, flow artists, various performance troupes. And Scott, thanks for coming on the show to warm us up for 2016.
It's freezing.
Yeah, the studio for everyone is we have all these windows and it's about like 60 degrees in here. We can't see our breath, but it's getting pretty close. So, Scott, tell us about fire props and Synergy Flow Arts. Your website is synergyflowarts.com.
Yes. And the flow arts seem to be a facet of the dance world that use props for, I think earlier there it was a lot of times it was called object manipulation. But that's kind of nerdy sounding.
We don't want to be nerdy. Yeah. We want to be artistic.
Yeah.
So when we see performers, you know, they have the hoops and the ribbons and things like that. But in this case, your performers are taking it one step further and they're lighting those hoops on fire.
Yeah.
So how, why, where did you get started and what was the idea behind it?
It sort of fell in my lap when I fell in love with a professional hula hooper. Julia Hartzell, my business partner, and that was about 10 years ago, and I was, you know, mystified by the art of hoop dance, and when I met her, she had just crafted her own fire hoop with a friend of hers, Spiral, and...
So when you're saying... hoop is the, and I think hula hoop, you put it around your body and you're going and you're doing like we did when we were kids. I'll age myself, right? In the 60s and 70s, we all had hula hoops and it was a great workout, but mine was not on fire. My abs were on fire when I did it, but my hoop was not. So is that the kind of thing, that kind of hoop, or
yes.
Are they on their arms? How are they doing it, and how do they not catch on fire?
It is a hula hoop. It's a plastic hula hoop, and just like from back in the day. And there seems to be like a resurgence in the in hula hooping,
right?
And it's more of a modern hoop dance movement that focuses more on dance than just like this pastime of like twirling it around your waist. It gets a lot more creative and dancey. A fire hoop is still a plastic hula hoop, which is really weird to have a plastic fire prop, but it's got these metal spokes that come off of it with balls of wick on the end.
Okay, so the fire's not on the hoop. It's out from the hoop.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, so the actual like hoop isn't on fire. The balls of fire are like out from the hoop at the end of these spokes. Generally 5 or 6 spokes on a fire hoop, but there can be all kinds of amounts, numbers of these spokes. And you dip these balls of wick in fuel and light it on fire and spin it around. If you were to hold the hoop vertically while these balls of wick were on fire, they would melt the plastic hula hoop. So there's a little bit of trickiness involved there.
Okay, hula hooping without fire is hard enough, but you're telling me, and I was standing still, so I never even could walk on hula hoop. So you're telling me they're dancing, they have the hoop, these... let's say 6 spokes are out, they're on fire, and they're doing Cirque du Soleil-type moves with these hoops, then.
Yeah. Yeah, the name of the game is kind of to keep the hoop moving so that you don't melt the plastic. And it's, you know, it's a challenge.
So are there videos on your website that people can see of people performing with the hoops?
Yeah, we have one little section right on the homepage that actually just directs you to the to our YouTube channel, where we've got a bunch of videos.
So if they can find you on YouTube, it's at Synergy Flow Arts?
Yes.
On YouTube, too. And yeah. So they can go out there and see these. Now, you're manufacturing these props. So you met the love of your life. You started doing this.
Yeah, we've since separated a couple years ago, but are still, you know, super close and okay. Still business partners. We have another business together, and actually she just bought me out of that business. It's another local business here in Carrboro called the Flojo, and okay. It's a movement arts studio, so it kind of goes hand in hand, all kinds of circus arts and movement arts.
So it teaches you how to move and flow.
Yep.
And then you provide the props.
Yeah. It's a nice synergy there also. The Flojo has a lot of aerial dance programs. Okay. So, you know, hanging from the silks and the trapeze and stuff like that. But then also lots of hooping things and different dance forms, all kinds of movement arts and circus arts and flow arts at the Flojo.
So all of this is from beginners, someone that's never done it, but it sounds appealing to the experienced people, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of programs and classes at the Flojo for beginners to advanced movement artists.
And so you don't immediately start with fire, right?
Correct. You don't. Yeah, you can. Yeah, if you're into the danger part of it, you know.
And you know the local fire station's number, right?
Yes.
So how did you decide? You met Jill?
Julia,
okay. And she was doing this, and you decided, oh, I'm going to make a fire hoop.
Yeah, well, I saw the fire hoop that she made you know, early on when I met her, and I looked at that thing, I was like, well, I bet there's some room for improvement here. And so I made one, and it was significantly enough better to where she was like, wow. And then her friends were like, wow, and I want some. And the fire hoop business grew just totally organically, grassroots, word of mouth from her friends liking her fire hoop and said, hey, Scott, can you make me one? So I started.
So you had a lot of buzz
yeah.
from it. So it's the fire hoop, and there are other props, because when I looked on your website, it looked like there were other things, too.
Yeah, fire hoop is really our flagship product. And the thing that really changed my life as an inventor and a crafter and a business person is a fire hoop product that's one step further. So the fire hoop is a hula hoop with these spokes that come out of it. And now, like now that we've been doing this for 5 or 6 years... there's all kinds of customizations and variants that you can have on your fire hoop. But the thing that I invented in 2010 was this thing called a quick wick. And it's one of these spokes
okay.
that you can clamp on to a hula hoop. And so it's
a conversion kit.
It's sort of a conversion kit. Yeah. It's turn your regular hula hoop into a fire hoop. And it's this idea that I had for years of like, wouldn't it be convenient if there was this thing that you could turn your regular hula hoop into a fire hoop? And so I hit the drawing board, and we had a little bit of funds from an event that Julia and I were throwing called Hoop Convergence, which was this conference for hula hoopers that happened every year for 8 years. Where 100 or so hoopers from all over the country and some international would gather for this 5-day long hoop conference called Hoop Convergence. Anyway, that was another one of our irons in the fire. That was really Julia's baby. She started that, and I would just help with some of the logistics and things, and you know, sound and lights and
right.
Organization, website, and taught her how to use spreadsheets, and that was pretty huge.
Every business needs to know how to do their spreadsheets.
Oh man, spreadsheets! Gotta love spreadsheets. Anyway, so you know, there was a little bit of money left over from that I was able to kind of invest in prototyping this product that's called the Quick Wick, and it's basically like one of these spokes with a ball of wick on the end. Attached to a clamp, and a little bit of welding is involved. It's all made out of stainless steel, and people buy one to however many of these they want, sold individually. And so a lot of times people will buy five or six and clamp them onto their hoop, and then voila, they have a hula hoop.
Wow. Okay. So you're creating products. So you did the first prototype. Now you've got the Quick Wick. That's your conversion kit for, you could get any hula hoop in any store of any color and attach them, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And so you're running this business. It's kind of an organic thing that you never went into, intended to be in the manufacturing of fire products.
Exactly.
But you're there, and what lessons have you been learning in taking that prototyping and funding and all these different, you're doing events, you're reaching out to customers, you're doing e-commerce. What do you think has been the biggest lesson that you've learned since you started the company in 2008?
Oh, I don't know. I just feel really, it's just like kind of lucky, like victim of some dumb luck here. I'd like to think that I, you know, did a lot of that, you know, like created a lot of this, and I have created a lot, but like I was really kind of at the right time, at the right place, fell in love with the right person. I'm a drummer. I wouldn't be creating fire hoops had I not met Julia Hartzell.
And it's like, so that's like, you saw something and you were interested and you decided I was going to try it. So you just jumped right in, and next thing you know, you have a business.
Yeah, I've always had kind of a creative, inventive mind, and I always liked, you know, doing things with constructs and Legos when I was a kid. And
love those Legos.
Oh, yeah. And so I've been kind of had an inventive mind for a long time, and I finally just like something clicked where it worked, and maybe it was niche enough.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I always get from people when they're like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I have a fire hoop company. They're like, what? I wouldn't think that like you could support yourself and employees and, you know.
So how many employees do you have?
I have one full-time employee and a couple part-time employees, and actually three other partners, three other co-owners in Synergy Flow Arts. And one of them is Julia, and two others are actually one's in California and one's in Colorado. They're friends of ours who had a fire hoop company 6 years ago. Their fire hoop company and my fire hoop company were like the top two fire hoop companies in the world, I guess. And
did you merge together?
Yeah, we merged. Okay. We were friends, and she, you know, they were really number one. But it was because of like they were more popular. Their marketing efforts were done better, I guess. And they had the more popular product. But I kind of had like a better product and some infrastructure already in place, like an employee and better tools and jigs and processes. Because I'm kind of like a shop guy. I'm like a builder guy. And this was a woman who was basically in, you know, on her living room floor, like crafting these things with hand tools. And she's like, Scott, I'm kind of drowning in orders and I might need to like jump ship. And, I'm like, well, let's merge because I'm ready for growth.
Well, and again, that's lucky meeting preparation because you knew the industry, you knew somebody, you were friends, they were great at the marketing and you were great at the product, and bringing those two together is a great synergy.
Yeah, yep.
And making those two skill sets work together, and then now you have a bigger company than you had before.
Right.
And I'm assuming you're number one since you've merged together.
Yeah, we are. And one of the next steps I've been working towards lately is forming more of a bit of a consortium with a few other of my favorite prop companies, because in the world of flow arts, there's hooping, there's poi, which are the like balls on the end of rope that you would twirl around.
Okay.
And, you know, the fire poi are very popular. So balls of fire on the end of chains, you have one in each hand and you twirl around.
So basically nunchucks on fire.
Sort of, yep, yep. And then, you know, there's a bunch of crossover in the juggling world.
Right.
Staff and baton sort of things. And
majorettes, those kind of things.
Yep.
A lot of majorettes twirled batons on fire.
Exactly. Julia was a flag twirler in high school. But she found the hoop many, many years ago. And
now if we could just get the Olympics to have fire performance for the gymnastics instead of just right?
It could be. It could be a thing.
It could be the next implementation of it.
But the the floor gymnastics with the what do they call it?
The ribbons.
There's ribbons, but they also use hoops.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of crossover there. And I mean, of course, their stuff is so athletic and so precise. And, you know, a lot of like the hippy dippy customers that I have that are like, you know, playing with their hula hoops at festivals. And, you know, some of them are bigger and do.
It's impromptu more than being precise.
It's more flow based. Right? It's more improvisational stuff. And that's like the kind of the key factor in the difference between, you know, the flow arts and the Olympic gymnastic folks.
Well, and it's the organic versus the Vegas show, right?
Yep.
So when the performers are out doing the Vegas show, or a Cirque du Soleil or a Barnum and Bailey or whoever's going to get out there and be tossing the fire in the ring and doing all the performances, there's room for both and there's different needs for both. But you could see how the niche, as you said, you found this one niche, but the potential to take it, you know, you're international selling your product now due to e-commerce, right?
Yep. It's cool. There has been a lot of crossover to some bigger performers that are getting bigger gigs. We've sold to people performing in Cirque du Soleil. And, you know, if they need a fire hoop, they're going to come to us because we've got, you know, the most trusted, most reputable products. So
it's fun. Like, I can imagine America's Got Talent, right? Or some show like that where they have the different performers that have the different fire.
Yep. And there are some people from, you know, our clientele and our customers that have been on that show. And I get an email from them every year being like, hey, do you want to, you know, apply to be on America's Got Talent? And I'm like, nah, no thanks. But,
so you'll be happy to supply whoever goes on to America's Got Talent, but you don't want to be on center stage.
Huh? Nah.
Yeah. But you're center stage when you do your drumming, or you perform with a band locally? You drum solo?
Typically I have an act, a band. But it's been, you know, drumming for so long is definitely like it ebbs and flows, hiatuses and plateaus and then peaks and... but right now, for the past year, I've definitely been on a hiatus and I miss it. And I'm feeling it sort of in my bones that, it's about time for
2016's a year for it to go on, to come back up. So what kind of music do y'all perform and what's the name of the group if it's still?
Last year I had a really great act together called the Astronaut Sex Pants, and it was a duo. With a local, very talented luthier. He builds guitars and really, really unique guitars. His name's Wes Lamb, and he's a Chapel Hill guitar crafter. And he's kind
artisan.
Yes, that's right.
Artisan.
Yep. He is known for his 8-string guitars. So they have like 3 bass strings and 5 guitar strings, and the bass strings have their own pickup that go out to a separate bass rig, and the guitar strings have their own pickup that go out to a separate guitar rig. So you play bass lines and shred on the guitar at the same time, and you're kind of playing the part of 2 people. And so we had a duo.
Actually, it sounds like you had a trio, just 2 people in it.
Exactly. It was a duo that sounded like a trio. And so, you know, the common thing was for people to watch us, especially for the first time, and be like, hey, where's the other person who's playing? But Wes was playing the role of 2 people. And then he actually also had like organ pedals on the floor, like a foot keyboard hooked up to a synthesizer, and would play sounds with that too. So it was a really full sound for 2 people. It was really fun and exciting. I really liked that act. And then we did that for like a year and a half. And then the fire started getting kind of low, like a little warm. We were having trouble stoking it. You know,
right.
We'd go to practice and it'd be like, oh, playing the same songs. And so we took a little hiatus. And I actually just hollered at him the other day. I was like, let's fire it back up. And he's like, yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's you burn out. I know when I had my corporate careers, if I got bored, I needed a different job, right? Either internally or somewhere else. And it's just our creative spirits go up and down like that. And sometimes we get into the winter and it lasts a little too long. But, you know, right now you're feeling very springy. What kind of venues and stuff did you like to play?
Oh, we just played kind of wherever people would have us. We weren't a very big act. We didn't like to, really travel much, or we didn't take it too seriously. It was very hobby for us. And I've gotten involved in the music hustle in the past before I got into business. And man, the music hustle's hard, and it's no joke, and it's hard. And it's not quite for me. I've done like a little bit of touring, and it's, it's a lot of time and energy for a little bit of money. And it's fun. And if you're really good at music and passionate about it, you can go somewhere with it. But if you're like me, where you're, not incredibly talented, you just do it for hobby's sake.
Well, we don't have to be great at everything we do. We just have to enjoy it. And that re-energizes us and helps us do our businesses even better.
Yeah.
So what is it about your business now that keeps you energized? And what would be the one thing that if you could have asked for 2016, what would be the one thing you'd want to work on?
I'm a little at the moment, I'm a little fired up about this idea of a consortium with these handful of other prop manufacturers that specialize in different props, because we kind of cover the fire basis as far as hooping goes. But there's another hoop company that has LED hoops.
Okay.
There's actually a lot more LED hoop companies out there than there are fire hoop companies. But this one LED hoop company that I recognize as the best, and, it's probably unanimous. If you were to take a poll amongst all the hoopers in the world, they'd probably say Astral Hoops make the best LED hoops. So I've been working with them for a few years now, and we collaborate on, sales and promotions and sometimes live vending events. And we just help each other out. We resell each other's products. They make the illest LED hoops. And then there's another company that makes that are known for their LED poi.
Okay.
And another company that are known for their fire poi. And so these three other companies and I, I'm fixing to I've talked with them all about it. And
so you're wanting to come together to be able to market together,
yep.
Promote, cross promote, do the things you're each great at, but build all of your businesses and make the water level rise so everyone's boat goes higher.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited about that. I haven't, finalized all my brainstorms and bullet points, but I'm, at this point just fixing to get that together and have a little round table with them and see how we can, create a mutually beneficial, mutually enhancing relationship.
Are you in the lab and in the workshop coming up with another product and tinkering? And
yeah,
did your eyes light up when you were talking about creating the quick clips?
The quick wicks, they were super fun. And Synergy Flow Arts is a little bit on autopilot right now. I do have lots of things on my docket for to do in that company, in terms of like trying to take next steps, bigger steps. I don't think business needs to be all about grow, but there's just a couple things that I think could improve and enhance the business. If we could grow a little bit more, maybe we can create some more jobs. Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
What's been the hardest part of it, though? If you had to say one thing, is it dealing with the tax man? It's what part of it has been the biggest challenge?
Oh, man. Honestly, it's been... Honestly, it's been having employed one of my best friends.
Okay.
And at the time, 5 years ago, it seemed like a great idea.
Well, yeah, because it's here's your friend, but here's the business relationship, and how do you maintain both? Yeah, that's...
Well, the problem is that we haven't maintained both very well, and, I'd like to take as much responsibility for it as I can. I've tried to do the best job that I can, being an employer and a friend. And I might have failed. And he still works for me, and I still consider him one of my best friends, but our personal relationship has been kind of squashed. And
it's things like that, because I see it with all my clients, and it's kind of like married couples too, because I can remember one particular client. When they would start discussing things about a business, they'd start fighting like the married couple they were, which was non-productive. And I can remember, like, doing the timeout on the field type sign, you know, with your hands saying, okay, wait a minute, this is, you know. And they said, well, I should become a marriage counselor. I was like, no, there's just certain things in business that you have to separate and step back from that. So maintaining those friendships and seeing that is, it's tough because here's the friendship, but as a friend, you can't take advantage, right?
Yeah.
And as an employee, you can't take advantage either way, but these are the things that have to happen when they have to happen because it's a business.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a challenge to being able to lay out the rules and the metrics and say, here's the business part, here's the friendship part, and neither one of us wants to take advantage of the other in that friendship realm. So that's always a big challenge, relationships.
Yeah. The rest has been really fun. The industry's fun. It's a bunch of, like, brightly colored, glittery people.
And everybody's on fire.
Yeah. They're all, like, you know, they're really spunky, artistic folks. And interacting with them one-on-one personally has been fun with the customers. And then we also sponsor artists. We endorse artists. Okay. And working with them has been fun.
And in what way do you endorse them? Like providing them equipment and that kind of thing for their performances? And
yeah. As a drummer, like, there are, you know, we use drums and we use cymbals.
Right.
And one of my favorite cymbal companies, you know, you'll go to their website and, one of the top five links at the top are artists. And you click on the artist link and you see all the artists that they sponsor.
Right.
And it's a really great program. It's a really great idea. I'm like, oh, look at all these people who use those cymbals, and like, I want to be just like them. So I'm going to buy these cymbals. And
right.
But more so, it's fun to just like conjure the camaraderie and stoke the fire in that way.
Get the excitement of the creativity and put it within the business and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and thank our underwriters, and we'll be right back.
Community Radio is supported by listeners like you, organizations and companies in our community. Focus Resources supports Focus on Business and is our underwriter for today's program. We'd like to thank Focus Resources, and if you'd like to learn more about this organization that supports WCFM and underwrites Focus on Business, you can visit their website, focusresourcesinc.com. Thanks to Focus Resources and all the station's underwriters.
So, Scott, what do you think in 2016? What do you want to accomplish? What are you thinking about? What kind of things are out there beside the consortium, which we were talking about? You want to get your drumming going? You want, you know, if you had three wishes for 2016, what would they be?
Well, the first one is easy. I've got a new business that I want to start.
Okay.
That I've been trying to get off the ground for a couple years now. And it's one of those, it's another product-based company making a unique drum product I've just been like kind of at the drawing board for a couple years, and it's gone in all these different directions and ups and downs, and I had a partner in on it for a while, and it's at the point where I need to, you know...
You need to make it happen.
I need to either, do the thing or get off the pot.
That was a polite way of putting that on saying. Thank you. Since we're on air.
So I was just reading. I get all these, like, business blogs and articles from now that I am so involved in e-commerce, and all these people trying to give me advice from different places, whether it's, like, my e-commerce platform or – Square is a credit card processor, and they've started dropping advice now because it behooves them to for us to succeed. Then they do better, so they want us to succeed. And anyway, I end up reading all these different blogs about how to do better in business, and one of them's that I was reading last night is like, don't get all hung up on perfection. You know, just get the thing done. You can always improve as you go along. Do it.
Right. Well, and we do. That's like, there's this point that you think, well, if it was just perfect, I would take it to market, but it's never going to be perfect. And I came out of the automotive industry, and so they would launch cars, and almost immediately we would be making the changes. And the entire life of the car, even up to like months before it was going to stop being produced, we would still be making little tweaks to the engineering or to those kind of things. And so we'd have the model year launch and then the quarter year model year and the half year model year, and all these changes would be constantly flowing in to fix a wiring or to put in, you know, some tweak on the carpet or some tweak on the rear view mirrors or the engines or all of those kind of things. So yeah, most companies, the larger ones especially, take a product to market and then introduce new innovations to it. Some tweaks, you know, they do, and some, and you know, and sometimes you don't. They're just little subtle things in the software, those little updates that come in it, right, that we get, have to download on our apps and all of those kind of things. So yeah, it's a matter of timing. You got to get it good enough to go to market that you don't feel guilty selling it to somebody.
Right.
But it won't be perfect when you take it to market. Yeah. So, what other lessons are you seeing in those blogs? And what do you like about getting those kind of blogs? And what challenges do they present?
One of them was about like photography, you know, how, in one way, like how important it is to get like pretty good photography for your products. If that's, you know, if you're like a product based company and you've got a website or an Etsy store or something, and, you know, that photo is selling your product. And so you want to come correct. And so, you know, one of the blogs was about how to get good photos, how to do it yourself. And that's been one of the thorns in my side. It's just getting the lighting right. And, you know, in slinging hula hoops, I've got all these different colors to choose from. The customers can choose different colors. And, like, I've got to, you know, accurately represent those colors. And I want to do it on a nice white background. And getting the lighting right has just been, like, a total struggle. And so I've had this on the top of my to-do list for like a year. It's like, take a photo of these, you know, this pile of hoops here.
So here's the question. And I asked this of a client, at what point does it make more sense for you to invest some of your dollars for somebody to do that versus doing everything yourself? Have you asked yourself that question? It's been a year. You've been trying to do it. Would it make more sense?
Yeah. It's funny because that particular issue I've gone back and forth on. I have hired photographers and I have paid. I've shelled out the clams for photography. And it's just another one of those double-edged swords, slippery slopes.
They don't quite get it the way you want it.
Either they do or they don't. And, you know, some of them are like, yeah, I can do that. And then they don't come through.
Right.
And so I you know, waste a little bit of money or I waste a little bit of time trying to do it myself. Ultimately, I've been going back and forth on that thing, whether, you know, to outsource.
It's that trade-off, right?
Yeah.
That trade-off, do I spend my time? Where's my time best spent as an entrepreneur? I have so many hours in the day. And I kind of do this because it's like I'm implementing software right now. It's a, you know, marketing platform and stuff. And so I'm learning it and doing it. It's like, well, maybe I should pay. No, because I need to know how it works in order to tell somebody what needs to go where. And right now I'm the only one that knows how I want these products built. And for me, it's fun. That's one of the things I get jazzed on, is learning new software and new things. And then taking marketing concepts for the new, you know, the new brave new world we're in, and marketing online and live and all that stuff, and then combining it with what the software can do, and then figuring out, okay, now how do my digital products have to look in that system? And so that's what jazzes me. But then at some point I know I won't want to do the stuff on a daily basis.
Right.
And so at that point, that trade-off comes when it becomes unenergizing and drains me, is when I switch it.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like what's going on with me. I would like to be able to just like shoot a product, like have my little photo shoot spot ready, because we're always coming out with like new variations or options or new products. And I just want to be able to get the photography done quickly and do it right. I'd like to be empowered with that ability. But dang, it's hard.
Well, no, I set up a, I have my white backdrop setting up in my office now with the lights and everything, playing around with for videos, and it doesn't. And then acoustics, some place where you can get the ceilings high enough for the lighting to be right, and then the acoustics go off on your sound, right?
Yeah.
And those juggling of that and wanting it perfect, or wanting it at least to meet my minimum standard, and to be able to film and not look like my hair is sticking out all over, and you know I have a 5 o'clock shadow because the lighting's wrong.
Oh, right.
And so you're just playing with all that, but it is that creative process that for a lot of us in business, that's what jazzes us about the business. But finding that balance of when to pull the plug and say, okay, it's good enough, and put it out there.
Yeah. I've enjoyed being able to have the option to outsource some things, and that's been nice. But yeah, that reminds me also on the video tip, you know, we're getting into like having YouTube channel, and I want to getting the fire stoked to like, or to put the fire under my butt to like make the video or shoot the photo has been really challenging. And you know, balancing it with all the other things to do.
Well, and I have a harder time. To make an audio is fine. To make a video, I'm that way. It's like, okay, I've got to get the camera set up. I've got to get this done. I've got to get this. But if I need to make a video, an audio recording, there's no problem. I don't procrastinate on the audio. I always procrastinate on the video.
Yep. That's classic. Like I always cringe when I hear myself on tape. And it's even worse, like, watching myself on video, you know. I don't like getting my picture taken.
Well, it's again, somebody says you should always listen to every show or whatever you've done. And I've watched my TV appearances, and those are fine. But I don't have time to go back and listen to every show I record. Yeah. Or, you know, if I'm editing them, I'm always amazed when I do something out of the studio or something, and it needs to be an hour. Maybe we went an hour and 10. To go, the amount of time it takes to go back out and edit 10 minutes out.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And it's just like it feels like I spend days making that edit out. And it's like, okay, I know I have to be more disciplined when I'm in the field recording and make sure it ends at 55 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to spend the next 10 weeks trying to get 10 minutes out and trying to find the time to edit.
One of my inspirations a few years back just in business was from a YouTube channel called Snake Bites TV. And it was these episodes would come out every week produced by, I think, BHB Reptiles or something. But it was this company, one of the largest snake breeders in the country.
So it really was about snakes.
It was all about snakes. And I was at the time, like, I've always been really nerdy about snakes ever since I was a kid. I love snakes. And this show was super nerdy because it was like a, you know, 10, 15 minute long episode every week that they put out. And they're like, look at this snake. And like, look at, we combined this snake with this snake and made this, you know, cool color pattern snake. I was really inspired by that because these guys were big enough, had a big enough operation to where they had a video guy like on staff all the
right.
time, like shooting the footage and putting together the episodes. And I was like, man, that's so cool. I want to get to that point. I would love to have something like that because I knew as a viewer, I was really inspired to watch when the episode came out every Wednesday. I'd like, you know, sit down with my sandwich at lunch and like watch this 10 minute episode, like kid in a candy shop. I loved it. And, yeah, if I could have like an on-staff videographer person, that would be really fun.
Well, and then having the dedicated space to do it in and stuff else. Because it's like I have my office and home has like the two-story ceiling in it. And it's great for the, like I said, for the lighting and that kind of stuff to play with that. But the acoustics are awful. And, you know, I get reverb and stuff when I'm recording. And so playing with the mics and all that kind of stuff, that process. And I was like, if I could just put it in a dedicated spot. And so many, I'm surprised how many radio shows that they do remotely, but they're broadcasting from like their walk-in closet in their in their bedroom because that was the room that they could have the most padding and everything in it and so everything. So it's always fun to look behind, pull the curtain back and see what Oz is doing to make everything work and stuff. And that's kind of what we're all doing in our business because the creative part is usually what brings us in. It's whatever product or service or technology that we're doing. It makes a big difference in what jazzes us and sets us on fire,
that's
literally
right.
or figuratively. So 2016, you want to get this new drum product out, and you're jazzed about designing it and getting it out there, the videos and all those kind of things. But what would be the one thing that in 2016 you think is coming at you that's kind of like a big challenge that's out there?
Oh, man. I think it's this element of force, momentum, like the thing that, like the driving force, like getting that to happen. So it's like, I need to like get that force to happen to make me do this or that, to shoot the videos, to shoot the photos.
You've been sort of cruising along at your 45 miles per hour and you really need to hit the accelerator.
Yeah, and especially on this drum product, like, I need to make it happen. I need to pull the trigger. I need to pull several triggers, and I need to just get it done.
So what kind of things are sitting there that if you had, what were the top three things you have to do to get that thing done? So is it finalize the design?
Part of it is, like, getting over my, like, perfectionism.
Mm-hmm.
And
so if you made no more changes to it, you went home right now, could you take it and manufacture it?
Yes. But I just haven't, because, like, I want to improve this one aspect of it. And, you know, I'll sit around thinking about all these different ways to do it, get at the drawing board and, like, try and come up with creative ideas. And it's just been taking forever. And it's like, Scott, you need to just go ahead and release what you have. And like you said, in how they would do it in the automotive industry, just keep, you know, tweaking it as you go.
Because a lot of times in automotive and other, you know, when you're producing it, you get into that production process, and making that first commercial example of it teaches you something in the manufacturing process that answers the question, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of what you suddenly start making it. And it used to happen. I'm not an engineer, but we were manufacturing and something would be going wrong with a new process. And they'd come to finance and get me, and somebody's like, well, you're not an engineer. I said, but they have to explain it to me, right?
Yeah.
So what is this process supposed to be? What is it supposed to do? How is it supposed to work? And in the course of that trying to get that design and get the production done and explain it to me, they would find that one thing that was just floating around in the back of their mind and saying, no, wait a minute, that was it. That was what we were missing. And that sounds like what you're kind of at that point.
Exactly. I think it's hugely helpful to get hands-on with it. And I'm guilty of doing this right now, is just spending too much time thinking about it. And I know that just from experience of, like, prototyping or designing another product that has been successful, it's been through tinkering where I find the aha moments and the real, like, the real keystones in the puzzle, creating solutions. So I need to take my own advice and, like, get into my little workshop and
start
crafting.
So will they be handcrafted? Is this something that you do? You carve them out? What kind of process is this? And what's it going to be made out of? If you don't mind sharing over the air with just a few thousand of us.
it's actually, oh gosh, the product has gone through so many
iterations.
Iterations. Okay. And right now, it's actually going to be made out of a 5-gallon plastic bucket.
Oh.
Plus a whole bunch of other parts. But, like, kind of the meat and potatoes of it is based around a 5-gallon bucket. And so there's an element of that that is, like, quote unquote, cool, because it's this, like, totally ubiquitous thing that everyone has access to. And so it is hopefully going to allow me to create this, like, uber accessible product and have it be made for cheap.
Right.
And maybe have,
or even self-manufacture.
Yes.
So, like, you could put a YouTube channel out there and say, here's the kit, and then show them how to do it.
And I, you know, my friend turned me on to the bucket idea, but, like, for a while it was like this really intricate, laborious, handcrafted wooden drum made with all these plies. And my partner at the time and I developed these jigs that were, I mean, you took a look at these things and it had these gears and sprockets and, like, these.
You were mad scientists.
Yeah.
Over engineering your product.
Yes. And it was really impressive and neat and fun. But then we just, like,
it wasn't practical.
It went to the standstill and lost momentum. And I really need to just, like, jump into this and use this easy thing that's already there, this bucket, and make this.
So I ask my clients this a lot of times. So what is the worst thing that could happen if you started manufacturing the product you have designed right now and put it in the marketplace?
Something like this product that I'm trying to get out there is the type of thing that would get picked up by the big giant corporations, mm-hmm. and they make their own version of it. And then the person...
knocked off. Yeah.
And, like, the QuickWick has already, you know, was knocked off within the first year.
So you're not patenting and on those kind of things?
I decided not to. Patenting is really expensive, mm-hmm. and the whole loophole situation with it is just...
China will still knock it off.
Yeah.
Or some of the other countries.
All you have to do is, like, change one little part about it, and then you can knock it off. So I found the most protection in registering my trademark. And actually, after I did that, you know, that just gives you a little R with a circle around it after the name instead of a TM.
Right.
But anyone can TM their.
Right.
Their,
and, that's usually your first step is say it's trademarked or service
right.
marked.
And you can
use it for 3 years and then you get it in the course of filing your copyrights.
Yeah. And so in order to get the registered trademark, you know, I had to go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and
USPTO.gov.
Yep. And they, you know, they do a search for
right.
if there's anything out there like it. If there's already something trademarked out there like it, then you can't get the trademark
similar
registered.
like or obvious.
Right. right yeah. So really, I mean, in retrospect, I think I would have been, you know, equally as protected if I just kept the TM after the name.
Well, even with and the clients and I go through this because I have a lot of clients that patent a lot of their science and their technology, and it's great to have it. But if you don't have the deep pockets to go to court to sue to protect it,
which
is usually where it's decided, then you know you've spent the money for the patent. But if you can't defend it in a court, then you're sort of in the same spot.
And there's a yearly renewing fee
too.
I think
so. It's like even on copyrights, I just had to renew my registered copyrights. I have a couple of those, and so. I had to go on and file, and it was like $300 for each copyright. I think it's every 6 or 7 years you have to do it.
Oh, that's
and there's like this little window of time. So I got the notices, and I went in, and there's like it wasn't time. And it's like so like every few days I was going in to kick in to find out when that little window of time, I think it's between the 5th and the 6th year, you have so many days to go in and file to renew your registered copyrights and prove that they were still being used in the marketplace.
Oh, okay. And you might know this better than I, but shoot, it's been like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years since I registered the trademark just for the name, the Quick.
Right.
And I haven't re-upped or anything like that.
Yeah, so you'll get a notice. I think it said between the 5th and 6th year, if I recall the wording on it.
Okay.
There's like this little period of time that you file and you go through and send in. You can go online and do it. And you have to upload the images to prove. And so, like, I took a picture of my website, my business card, some marketing materials and stuff for each one, whatever it was it still in use? So, like, you would take a picture of your product with it on, you know, the branded name on it and those kind of things, and then you upload it. But it was just kind of funny that you get the notice and say, yeah, you know, by this date, you know, it was when it renews or doesn't renew, and you have such a 6-month period or something. If you don't do it in that, you'll surrender it.
Yeah.
But after that little window of time, it costs a little bit more money. So
it seemed like it was a really, it was worth it. I think it was like $500 to register the trademark, and it has offered me protection just because when people have knocked off my product, I've been able to go with them when they call their product the Quick Pele Wick.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, you know, like I've paid for this. Can you take at least take the word Quick out of the name?
Right.
And they're like, oh yeah, okay. And so they do that. And you know, and it helps when people are searching for things like the Quick is now like kind of the Kleenex of, you know, like
right.
Kleenex is a tissue, but people, when someone wants
it's
a
like
tissue,
we say we're going to go on the internet and search and we Google it.
Right.
It's become that, is what you're saying. It's the brand that they think of and associate with that product.
Right. So sometimes when, you know, I see people with Quick knockoffs and they're like, hey, look at these Quick Wicks. I'm like, those aren't Quick Wicks. or you know,
you
other...
get to send them that little cease and desist.
Yeah. I don't know. But it's as far as the drum product goes, I think one of the biggest, as you were saying, like one of the, you know, biggest things to consider there is that like something like this product is going to get like immediately knocked off by the big corporations. So I've had a couple different ideas in how to like kind of stick it to the man in some ways or just keep it proprietary or keep it, you know, keep that from happening. And I am a strong believer in like the triple bottom line, you know, besides profits and the planet, you know, people too are important to business and sort of along those lines, like a social aspect to this product in that it's a little, almost a little anarchist in that, I,
Oh, wait, if you put it in the marketplace in a certain way, you can defeat the reason for them to knock it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. if you find that one certain way. Well, we're at the end of our hour, if you can believe it.
Oh, my gosh.
And I want to thank Scott Cruz of Synergy Flow Arts for being on the show. You're listening to WCOM FM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is Focus on Business. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things.